RTL Original Podcast.
A burnt-out car is found in an industrial zone in Longlaville, France. In its trunk, remains of a man. The vehicle has Luxembourgish license plates, and the remains turn out to be those of the car's owner. His name is Antonio Carta. Antonio worked as an engineer, but also as a call boy and a private detective. Did this double or triple life lead him to meet the wrong people, or poke his nose into something that would ultimately turn out to be fatal? Or was his girlfriend behind the murder, who said her boyfriend had been threatening to kill her? Welcome to DNA, Luxembourg Crime Podcast. Today, Shot and Burnt, the case of Antonio Carta. On Saturday, the 1st of July, 2006, at 10:40 p.m., French firefighters are alerted to a burning car in an industrial park in Longlaville, just across the border with Pétange. The car fire is captured by surveillance cameras of an industrial company there, and as it's the weekend, the area is quite empty. When firefighters arrive at the scene, they make a gruesome discovery. A charred body lies in the trunk. Forensic experts are called and arrive at the scene to conduct an autopsy. Because of the charred and carbonized state of the body, finding clues and pinpointing the exact time of death has become much more difficult. Experts believe the death to be dated back to over 48 hours before the discovery of the burning car, meaning the victim must have been killed long before the vehicle was set alight. Another clue that the forensic experts find: there is an entry orifice in his skull, probably that of a bullet. Because of the Luxembourgish car plates, French investigators work closely with their Luxembourgish counterparts. The man given the mission to solve this, what appears to be gruesome kidnapping and murder, is Rudy Backus. Backus begins his investigation by paying a visit to the registered address of the car. The car is in the name of Antonio Carta, and the autopsy report confirms that Antonio is indeed the killed individual. The address takes the investigator to a home in Merche, which belongs to Antonio's mother. When officers arrive at the scene, Antonio's mother is on vacation. She lives in Merche alone, as Antonio's father had passed away several years earlier. But police have a warrant to enter the house. Inside the house, there are absolutely no signs that may hint towards a violent altercation. However, there are clues in the garage. In the garage, officers find a brownish-red liquid trail that stretches from the back end of the garage to a siphon in the middle. It's a blood trail, over 2.5 meters long. Investigator Backus knows such a quantity of blood is not the result of a small accident. It's not the result of a bleeding finger or something of that sort. And with a burnt body registered to this address and a trail of blood found in the garage, another crucial part of the crime timeline has been located. So, who was Antonio Carta? Antonio was born in Luxembourg in July of 1966. He was of Sardinian descent and lived in Merche with his two parents. He was an only child. He went to primary school in Merche and then to the technical high school. He completed an apprenticeship at a garage and was then full-time employed at the Goodyear tire factory. Friends of Antonio, often calling him Tony, said he had a quiet life at home and was well looked after. His father was retired, and although he had passed away, the son was loved dearly. Mother cooked for him when Antonio came home from work. Antonio worked morning shifts, and in the afternoon he took time for his real passion, music. The job was just to make money to build his music career. Strategies were drawn up as Antonio dreamt of playing concert stages. He had a band called The Group Exchange. They were a successful group in the late 80s, and they had a small fan community in Luxembourg, playing festivals such as Rock am Knuddler. Among the fans of Group Exchange was a woman named Corinne. And not long after meeting, Corinne and Antonio fell in love. The relationship seemed to be going really well at the start. A few years later, colleagues and friends of Antonio said they noticed a change in him. At Goodyear, he requested to work part-time, and people were wondering why. Antonio wanted to succeed in music, yes, but he was also exploring other career opportunities. He began advertising himself as an escort, or a call boy, in various daily newspapers, internet platforms, and others. It's not clear how explicit his services were. Besides this side job, so to speak, on top of that, he was also working as a private detective. He had a one-man detective agency, which had a license to work and operate in France. According to interviews with people close to Antonio, he was exploring new paths and tried to turn his life around as he was maneuvering a very complicated private situation. In those years, things were falling apart between Corinne and Antonio. There were frequent fights, and Corinne would later go on to say that her boyfriend regularly threatened her. There was also the presumption that Antonio was involved in some kind of bad business, maybe to do with his private detective work, and that he was being sought after by criminals. In the later investigation, terms such as gold and diamonds were mentioned in conversations. However, nothing was ever found of such sort. However, it is clear that Antonio had some enemies in his everyday life. But in fact, Corinne was becoming one of them. Corinne is really upset about their relationship, and she confides in her best friend, Yvonne. The two spend a lot of time together, and Yvonne is the one who first hears about the threats Antonio is apparently making towards his girlfriend. It is actually with Yvonne where Corinne finds refuge when she feels humiliated or mistreated by Antonio. Now, there was some talk later on that maybe these two women were secretly in a relationship, but none of them ever admitted to that. There is a very important moment in the investigation, which comes within a day of police finding the burnt-out car, and with it Antonio's body. On the 2nd of July 2006, so the following day, Corinne's mother calls the police and says her daughter was being followed by French-speaking people, and that her boyfriend, Antonio, had repeatedly told her he wanted to kill her. Police know it's now time to summon Corinne to the police station, where she is being asked about her mother's call. Corinne says, "Antonio wanted to shoot and burn me." Precisely the two killing methods found on Antonio. So now police are wondering, is it a mere coincidence that this statement is coming out right now? It's a little bit odd, and in the case Corinne is behind the killing, she's not playing a very good game at hiding it. There are other clues that add to investigators' suspicion that Corinne may have been involved. Corinne had found a note, sort of folded up and stuck beside the entrance to her house. It was apparently the handwriting of Antonio, telling Corinne that he's going to be away for a few days. So she also wrote him a note in response and left it there in the same place, which police find strange and suspicious. Because we are already deep into the age of mobile phone communications, this note is more of an indication for the investigators to doubt Corinne's credibility. Anyway, she is in such a state of shock after the interrogation that she collapses on the floor and is admitted to hospital. But investigators, they don't trust Corinne. Her interrogation did not go well for her. So they start doing some more digging. They find out that Corinne and Antonio were a couple, but never lived together. They did not make a life plan together, although Corinne did apparently have the desire to have children someday. By 2001, the relationship must have deteriorated to a point where the two did not want anything to do with each other anymore. And as the tensions in the relationship increase, Corinne finds a listening ear in Yvonne, and the two women decide to take action. They want Antonio to be punished, but they have to find someone else to do it for them. In September of 2005, Corinne tries to find someone who could teach Antonio a lesson. That lesson, specifically, is to hit Antonio with a baseball bat. There were talks of attacking Antonio with a firearm, but the man she found to do the job refused to pull a trigger. He refused the job entirely. She ended up finding someone else. Corinne gave that person 500 euros and he was supposed to bring Tony to his senses. For some reason, in the end, Corinne and Yvonne scrap the plans of hiring the second guy as well and take matters into own hands. The two friends eventually manage to get their hands on a gun. They take it out to an abandoned area to test it. The autopsy report determined that the time of death occurred almost 4 days prior to the discovery of the burning car, placing the focus on Tuesday, the 27th of June, 2006. Let's go back to that day, the day Antonio Carta's life came to a tragic end, and put the puzzle pieces and the timeline together. Antonio finishes his shift at work at 2 p.m. and heads home. His mother is away on holiday in Sardinia, and later that evening, Corinne comes over. They've agreed to meet, for whatever reason. They settle in to watch the World Cup match between Spain and France, or Brazil and Ghana, but then suddenly an argument erupts, and the situation spirals out of control. By the end of the evening, Antonio is dead. Corinne calls her friend Yvonne in a panic, saying, "Come quickly, something happened." Yvonne leaves her place in Angelsberg and drives to the house in Mersch. When she arrives, she finds Antonio lying on the floor, his head resting on the stairs, with a gun in close proximity and a bloodstain on the ground. Yvonne tells Corinne to call an ambulance, but Corinne refuses, insisting and shouting, "It's not possible. Nothing is possible. This couldn't have happened." What happened that night is pieced together through conflicting accounts. But Corinne claims that Antonio threatened her during an argument and, in a moment of fear, she defended herself and shot him with the gun she had purchased together with Yvonne. Corinne and Yvonne decide to cover up the crime scene. They proceed by tying Antonio's hands and feet and place his body in a sack, hoping to stage the scene to look like someone else committed the murder. Investigators later described it as a pretty clumsy attempt to make the crime appear like a targeted hit. In fact, lead investigator Rudy Backus would go on to say he thought the two women had watched way too many crime movies. For 4 days, Antonio's body remains in the boot of Corinne's car, parked in the garage. Meanwhile, the woman tried to figure out what to do next. Yvonne later claimed she felt increasingly uneasy and even thought about going to the police, but she didn't follow through. How could she throw her best friend under the bus? Her friend who had apparently been harassed, abused and threatened by her boyfriend. Yvonne grabs Antonio's laptop, his clothes and the murder weapon and takes them home. She feels dragged into this case without wanting to, but finds herself giving in whenever Corinne asks for help. Isn't that what best friends do, she wonders? But where's the limit? For 4 days, between Tuesday and Saturday, the body of Antonio is lying in the trunk of the car in the garage of his own house. The two women continue to work on a plan to get the body out of the house. They cleaned the house a second time, getting rid of any potential evidence. Yvonne even asks another friend to come help them, who declines. Or another person would have been dragged into this case. Their eventual plan to dispose of the body was far from well thought out. On the 1st of July, the two of them meet up. To make it seem like nothing had happened, Corinne even casually books an appointment with the hairdresser that morning. Corinne asks Yvonne to accompany her with her own car. The two start driving. But all along, blood had been seeping out of the car onto the floor of the garage, a crucial detail that both women had overlooked and became the biggest clue in the investigation. They drive towards France, hoping to dispose of the body there. Along the way, they make a quick stop at a shopping center in Mont-Saint-Martin for a coffee and to buy odor neutralizer, an indication of how awful the smell must have been of a dead corpse in a hot summer car. Thinking of Antonio's enemies and the fact he had been followed by French-speaking guys, the women decide that France could be a good distracting cover-up to dispose of the body. Finally, they park the car in an industrial area across the border and pour petrol all over the vehicle. Yvonne refuses to set it alight, leaving that part to Corinne. The car burns, but it isn't enough to hide the evidence. After the deed, they drive to Trier for a coffee to escape the scene cold-bloodedly. The authorities managed to piece together all of these events using phone records and tracking movements. By the 1st of August 2006, both Corinne and Yvonne are arrested. Nobody denies the charges. What follows are months of conflicting stories, shifting blame, and attempts to minimize their responsibility in the crime. In total, Corinne gives 8 different versions of events, even accusing Yvonne of the murder at one point, as well as the murderers being a French person or a Belgian killer. Later in court, she came up with the accident at home. While police could not secure the gun, they found 3 bullets fired by the same gun, the same caliber and brand. One of those bullets was found in Antonio's head. In court, the question was of course raised whether Corinne was sane at the time of Antonio's death. She was seeing 2 psychiatrists at the orders of the court. They saw Corinne, who was severely traumatized by her own actions, but absolutely could distinguish right from bad. But she was also desperate to get out of the relationship. In court, Corinne is found guilty of premeditated murder and sentenced to life in prison, while Yvonne, convicted as an accomplice, initially receives 25 years. Both sentences were later reduced on appeal, Corinne to 30 years and Yvonne to just 5. A third person, going by the name of Paul, who had supplied the gun, was also convicted but served only 2 years. Plus, the 3 defendants had to pay €55,000 in damages to the victim's family. Even now, 2 decades later, this case remains one of Luxembourg's most unusual. It leaves lingering questions. Why didn't Corinne leave Antonio peacefully before things escalated? And how did Yvonne, initially just a friend, become so deeply entangled in the aftermath? A woman murderer and a female accomplice. An extraordinarily rare phenomenon. In Luxembourg since 1990, women are the culprits in only 13% of homicide cases, including in the death of Antonio Carta.